Hello and welcome to A Life Economy. I'm Cosmo Sharp.
And I'm Summer Perry.
And with us, we're joined by James Jensen. Welcome, James.
Hey, everybody.
Glad you could be here. This is going to be a great conversation. James, you are the co-founder of The Void, as well as SendSync. For people that have no idea what, let's talk about The Void first. How do you usually describe the experience for people?
That's had a lot of evolution over the years, but I think the best way to describe it to people is if you've ever had a realistic dream, then you know what The Void's like. Because everybody's had a realistic dream before, so that's kind of what it feels like in the moment. It feels very real, but something's off a little bit, right? And that's how realistic dreams are.
Sure, absolutely. But as I understand, well, not as I understand, as Summer and I experienced going to The Void, it's essentially like a theme park version of virtual reality where you can go out to a location and put on a headset, and you are able to engage with VR in a much more immersive way than you can at home, because you're bringing in a lot more effects like heat and cold and smell. And can you talk a little bit about some of the multisensory aspects of what you created?
Absolutely. And those kind of evolved over time. The original concept was just to basically eliminate all the barriers to entry for people to experience virtual reality. And then it can kind of evolved into this hyper reality situation where we started adding a whole bunch of effects. In addition to the wall system that we created, it was really important to me to be able to build a physical realm with a virtual realm mapped over the top of it. I didn't really understand how that would impact people in the beginning, but it's very clear to me now. But being able to be in the virtual world together with other people definitely changed a lot of things. Being able to experience things together, we had heat and wind and vibration effects and smells, all to kind of solidify what you're seeing is real. It's really pretty amazing once you get there, and we came to find out that you need a little bit more than just visuals and audio for your body to believe that you're actually there. So once you started adding in all the other senses, naturally your body experiences reality that way, right? It's not just audio and visual. We have all these other senses. And so when you tap into some of those other senses, it becomes very real to people. That's why I kind of want to move away from virtual reality into hyper reality. My personal opinion of that was we were kind of doing something different. And I noticed that when people came out of the experience too, they're like, wow, that is something I've never experienced before. And these are people that had done VR before. And it was pretty cool to traverse that.
Yeah, Summer and I had a wonderful time at our first. You want to talk a little bit about the Ghostbusters experience?
Yeah, so I...
That's my favorite.
Yes, it was so good. I went to it at Times Square, I think a few months after it was released, and the line was really long. It took a long time to get in because it was so much demand. But the cool thing about, there's so many things that I loved about it. I love Ghostbusters. I thought that was a really great choice for like a theme that you chose. And I noticed that the staff, so there's a lot of staff involved, like helping people come in and get suited up. And then also like during the experience, there were staff helping make things happen. And then, you know, exiting, helping you out of your gear and, you know, sending you on your way. They always seemed excited too. And I thought that was really cool because it's really rare that you go out and you see people at work and they're having a great time and they're like genuinely enjoying what they're doing.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, so I also really loved the, I don't want to like give too much of it away, but there were some experiences at the end where these fragrances came out and that kind of blew my mind. I think that was the most immersive part of it for me was the aromas that you guys used. And, you know, like with it, there was a lot of wind and of course the sound effects and the visuals, but it was really cool to like experience actual aromas. And I was just wondering how you guys made that happen. Like, where did it come from? And like, what kind of tech did you use to make that happen?
Yeah, we use different kinds of tech and those evolved over time. But I have a question for you, because you guys have obviously done lots of virtual reality and you've done The Void. As you reflect back and think about your virtual reality experiences versus what The Void was, like, how vivid are your memories of a virtual reality experiences versus what you remember in Ghostbusters?
It's a really good question. Yeah.
Yeah. It's The Void was definitely way more memorable for me than more so than a game or any other experience that I've had before. And I think it was due to the extra sensory additions that you had. Like, I can remember the whole,
yeah,
from beginning to end. It's like one of like the most effective memories I have.
That's the key right there, is when you have those other effects, you are able to create a memory where you remember details, you remember how you felt, you remember the people that you were with, you remember exactly that last moment that you're talking about where you get that smell. And it's solidified in my mind too, because that's one of my favorite moments out of all of the experiences we ever created, was actually being in that moment after seeing the film and you know, over my childhood and stuff, and then being able to live that. Man, that's a cool memory to have, like, embedded, you know. I've done lots of other virtual, believe me, I've done lots of virtual reality stuff, but I have memories like that of experiences that we created in the very beginning, and those experiences don't exist anymore because we didn't update the software, but there were these places that I remember that are gone, which is pretty wild. It's like, it's like going to Hawaii and then Hawaii is gone.
Yeah, I know. With it being like a temporary location based like experience. I also just remembered that you guys did you had some temperature fluctuations in there. There was some heat at the end when there's heat involved. Can we talk about what actually happens, or is that like, can I mention?
I think so. I mean, there's stuff that people have talked about online already. Cool. There's public about the experience. People have given very detailed descriptions of what happens through the whole experience. So I think we're safe.
Good. Okay. Awesome. The part where you're shooting the ghost plasma guns and then everything starts heating up and you can feel the heat coming onto you, and then the aroma comes in. Yeah. That was just amazing.
There's some interesting things that happen inside of the experience, inside of hyperreality experiences. Like, we can, we found that we can give you a scent or we can give you a feel of something, and then your mind actually creates it. There's not necessarily heat in some situations, but since you've related that heat to something else, you will create it in another area in your mind.
Whoa, wow.
Very, very, very early on, we had this torch, and in the beginning, when you lit the torch, there was a heat element there, and then you could feel the heat, right? What was interesting is people would walk away from that and go down a hallway, which is 15 feet away from it, and they would be like, oh, the torch is so warm.
Yeah.
They would just create it in their minds, and it really showed how powerful our minds are and how much we kind of fill in the gaps in reality a lot. It really opened my eyes to a lot of things.
Certainly the integration of the multiple modes of perception, right, is a big part of creating that extra sense of immersion and memory. But I want to also add that it's the multiplayer capability that was also a huge feature for me, and the big reason why that, you know, specifically the Star Wars experience, which is the one that I did, was so much fun, was because it was like hanging out with my friends or my coworkers all together, all look, you know, appearing as stormtrooper avatars. But I know that they're my friends, even though I when I see them, they're, you know, they're moving as these other characters. How early on did you realize how important that the multiplayer social component of The Void was?
We actually found out that pretty early on. And it was why we were integrating multiplayer. I actually saw it when we first brought like my kids in, and we brought some of the other employees' kids in, and we put them in the virtual reality headset by themselves, and they would not move. They were in a new place and nobody else was there with them. And they would literally just stand there, and you had to kind of grab their hand and like, no, it's okay. And they're like, but I can't see you. And and then we finally got multiplayer done where the parent could actually be with the child and they could lead. And it was a completely different experience. The kids weren't scared at all. They were with somebody else. And that was kind of the beginning. We're like, oh, wow, this is really powerful. And then we saw that several other times where we were doing experiences where, you know, specifically on the Ghostbusters experience, when we had some of the executives come in, there was a point where one of the old directors actually went into the experience by himself. And there was no conversation going on. He was in the first room where you're blowing up all kinds of stuff. And it's a really fun environment. But if you're there by yourself, there's no conversation. There's nothing to share with anybody. And so he was completely silent. And then when he went out to the premiere, he actually went through three of his other colleagues. Mm. And they were having a great time. Like, oh, this is blown up and this is cool. And oh, check this out. And there was this whole conversation happening, right? So powerful. To share that, and it even solidifies that memory to people a lot more, and it's really important not overlook that.
Yeah, that's. I think we can even blow that up to, like zoom out and apply that concept to life in general, right? Because it's like life is fun and valuable because we get to share it with other people, right? Like if we could imagine for a moment, which is kind of impossible, like what life would be like if it was just us, right? If life was a single player experience, then like we don't have anyone to talk to or to share our experience with. And I think what you're seeing a reflection of that built into, you know, what you're creating.
Yeah, I would guess some people have probably experienced a little bit of that over the last few weeks, the separation between, I know I have experienced a little bit of that too, but yeah, sharing it with people. And I guess tapping into kind of those natural tendencies we have as human beings, the closer we can get to that in virtual reality, the more real it is to people. You can't overlook that.
That brings up a really important point. I know a lot of people are struggling right now with isolation and not being able to be with their friends and just like interact with people on a regular basis. As humans, I think that we have a deep need for connection. And with VR in particular, using the headset to create these immersive experiences, of course, multiplayer helps. But what do you think the role of the headset will be in the long term versus like immersive environments created through immersive design? Mm-hmm. That both meet the need for human connection and the need that humans have for new experiences, novel experiences, and immersive experiences?
I feel like we're pretty light on the multiplayer integration with home-based headsets and virtual reality, and I feel like that needs to kind of come together a little bit more. I'm really excited about the hopefully near future where I can come home and put on VR and not be separated from my family, right? I would buy more headsets if I could say, hey guys, let's go in this thing and we're going to build a whole world together. Making that super easy for people. So I can put on a unit, I can give the ones to my kids, and then all of a sudden my whole house or my living room or whatever is transformed into this place dynamically, right? We're very close to that with photogrammetry techniques and point clouds and being able to capture the space and then overlay. Once we get to that point, I feel like you'll be able to share and collaborate in the way that we were in the void to an extent, right? Being able to have people invited remotely into your space with other people that are actually in the space, I think we'll get us really close.
Yep, that's a really, really good point. And as much as I love virtual reality, one of my biggest frustrations with it is that it is generally very isolating, right? And so it's like I'll put on the headset and everyone else in my apartment, or you know, my roommates or Summer or whoever else is there, it's like, oh, I wonder what he's experiencing. Either they can't see at all what I'm doing, or you know, it's connected to the computer, it's like they see a version of what I'm seeing, but there's this distance, there's this gap between what I'm experiencing from within my own consciousness looking out through the headset versus what everyone else is seeing is just me flailing around with this weird black gear on my head.
Well, really, I think you're going to see a huge shift once you can have shared experiences that are really easy for people to get into. I mean, right now you can do it. It's complicated and you have to understand what's going on and how to connect devices. And but hopefully we'll be able to traverse that territory over the next year or so, and you'll start seeing more collaborative kind of environments that are integrated with your real world.
Mm, Yeah, that's awesome. And what comes to mind is augmented reality, right? Because that's, you know, more easily social, you know, with ARKit and AR Core, you can have multiplayer AR experiences. Honestly, I haven't really tried or seen that myself, but I feel like the future of that seems a little bit more feasible compared to VR, where you need to have a much more space to have multiple people wearing headsets at the same time and preventing people from walking into each other, which is kind of a funny first world problem.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I walked into my wall, or I walked into my pet, or broke my TV.
Yep.
Yeah, I think there's like whole Reddit pages about people, like VR fails, I think it's called.
Oh, just, like, yeah, I've seen some of this.
Like jumping through, like almost falling up. That's not funny, but like, you know, running into plants and knocking over their TV and things like that.
I think that's an interesting thing to point out too, is we have an amazing opportunity and almost a responsibility for some of the content that's being created. I know there's content creators that are out there just making stuff, but you can see that it really impacts people. And when we cross that threshold where these things start to feel very real and there's other senses, we kind of have to be a little careful of what we're doing and how that influences the individual. And I think it's a scary thing. It's an opportunity that we have to build something that's useful. And I think it's a really cool opportunity. It's something we have that's ours to take advantage of.
It's a really, really excellent point, and something that I've mentioned, and I think probably a few of my opening remarks at VRLA, right? Because virtual reality, unlike virtually any other medium or technology before it, is able to tap into our central nervous system and hijack our perception in a way that is really unprecedented, that nothing else can really do in the same way. And so, what are we experiencing through VR? What is the kind of content? What kind of worlds are we going to? How are we interacting with people? How do we show up inside of these virtual worlds? And most certainly, you know, the developers, right? There is absolutely the responsibility to create experiences that are not just fun but also safe, because the emotions are so much more amplified when you believe and perceive that you are inside these 3D game worlds versus having that separation where the game is just on a screen. So yeah. I'm curious, when you guys have been designing worlds for The Void, how did you take that into account?
For when I was at The Void, when we were creating experiences there, we ran a lot of tests with people in the experiences to see how they were impacted by certain situations. The Void has created, I'm sure, a huge playbook on what to do, what not to do in certain situations. But we are very careful about how we treated certain situations and phobias and all kinds of things, right? Very gentle with it.
Absolutely.
Being aware that we are potentially creating memories for these people, and we want those memories to be something that is wholesome and good for them.
Well said.
How much research did you have to do, say, on like phobias or other issues like epilepsy or ages for children when it's appropriate? Is it viewed like screen time? Like how much research did you guys have to do regarding safety and responsibility?
I think we found very early on, even just in like gray box simulations we were doing, that things felt very real to people, like edges, for instance. I know my son talks about this time early on when we brought him in, and it was just gray box. So it's like green cubes, and there was this edge, and I had him jump off the edge, and it was only a 6-inch gap, but man, it really impacted him.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in the very beginning, there wasn't, this is so brand new that we saw evidence of, oh, hey, we need to probably be a little more careful with people when we put in certain situations. And so we were only able to observe what was happening and then take notes on that and progress from that. As far as what research and stuff they're doing right now, I'm not sure, but I'm sure it's evolved quite a bit since then.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought of that because we I led the launch of a virtual reality arcade here in Los Angeles and ran it for a year. And we really struggled with the age of the appropriate children's age because all the kids wanted to try it, but we didn't know, you know, do we let little five-year-olds in here or do they need to be 12? So that was like difficult. And we have a lot of really funny video of people doing Richie's Plank, which I'm sure you've seen.
Yep.
People just lose their mind, especially if they're afraid of heights. But I experienced that in the Ghostbusters. But since you mentioned that you were being very careful and like handling it in a respectful and like gentle way, there was the part in Ghostbusters when you're about to walk across the fire escape and it, you can feel the ground feels unstable and then like the wind is blowing and it's meant to seem like maybe it's not safe, but it was just barely like that. Like it was.
Yep. Just right on the edge.
Yeah. You can get through it and you're like, oh my gosh, I might get really scared. And you're about to get really scared, but it's okay. So I picked up on that. That was really cool.
Yep. That is cool. You know, as we're talking about this, just there's this flip side too, right? Just for entertainment, but man, the applications for actual phobias and doing research and creating experiences that, you know, that we can study and we can collect data on, there's a huge opportunity for us to do some amazing things with this in that kind of field.
Yeah. Tell me about that. I mean, I know you have thought a lot about the ultimate potential of VR and how it could, how it can and is positively impacting people. Where do you see VR going, I guess, in the short term and in the long term in terms of its ability to impact people and change the world for the better?
Yeah, I think maybe I'll just give you a short story about how I come to find out about this, how I came to this knowledge. I was able to watch hundreds of people, thousands of people go through the void. And there was an interesting thing that happened at the end. The people would come out and they would be, they would almost question reality. There was this moment where they came back into reality where everything was new and everything was possible again. And so one of my favorite things to do is actually just sit at the exit of any of our locations. I would out in New York, I would go out there. If I had free time, I would just sit at the exit and watch people come out. And we had a saying that adults went in one side and kids came out the other side. And man, it really kind of consumed me that there was this huge potential there, right? Like people are coming back out as little kids and everything is possible again. And we aren't necessarily curating a piece of content that amplifies that or takes advantage of that moment.
Yeah.
And what would happen if we did take advantage of that? We curated an experience. And so over the last 2 years, 2.5 years or so, that's really kind of been my whole life is trying to discover what that is and curating an experience and taking advantage of that. And my mentality on virtual reality has shifted a lot, completely from virtual reality is not an escape from reality. Virtual reality is a place for us to go have experiences that amplify our reality or help us understand our reality in a completely different way. We have an awesome opportunity there to visualize, to you know, to get to different types of state of mind, to be able to come back into reality and make huge changes, whether that be in sports or medical or pick a field. Like all the verticals are there, right? So education. So that's where I feel like, we need to go in the future. And so all of my projects, since I've moved on from the void are focused, very much on the reflection period. Not necessarily on the virtual reality part, but the reflection period after you go through an experience.
Beautiful. And I want to get into SenSync, but just, I want to pick up on one thing that you said that really, I don't know, I got some chills earlier, which was, adults go in one side and kids come out the other. And what I realize is like what's so amazing about what you created with the void and what a lot of these location-based entertainment experiences are like, it's like this high-tech version of playing in the playground as a kid where, you know, the kind of the sad part about it is like we have to have all this like crazy expensive gear and like all this like low latency computing and tracking and like, I mean, it's cool. It's amazing that like you guys were able to create this really innovative tech to make it all happen. But it's funny because it's like I'm like remembering these vague memories of like being a kid in the playground and like running around and making up stories and games with, you know, my friends or just random kids there. And you know, we didn't need to put on a headset and wear all this crazy gear to like have a fun, immersive experience. We were just in our imagination. And I definitely, you know, remember feeling like, yeah, like anything is possible. When coming out of that VR, you know, coming out of the void, it's like, wow, I can't wait to just see what comes next, you know, 5 years, 10 years of like, that's what's, I remember thinking like, wow, like if that's what's possible now, like, can you imagine what's going to be coming down the pipe in the future? Like it's just ridiculous.
Yep. It really is. What a huge opportunity for us to take advantage of and to use for good, you know?
Absolutely. So would love to talk a bit about SenSync and, first of all, what it is and, how you were able to kind of leverage some of your experience at the Void into this new project.
Yeah, so SenSync was, it started as a conversation with me and one of the other co-founders, Adam Ghazali, and Alex is his other partner that was part of that project. And Adam had come on to the Void as an advisor. Adam Ghazali is the neuroscientist at UCSF. He manages the neuroscience department at UCSF. And he's the director. I mean, the guy's brilliant. He's awesome, awesome dude. And we were able to have a lot of conversations about what is in the Void and what the Void means and what kind of simulations we could do. And through conversations with him and where we were going with, where I was going with some of the understanding of what the true potential was of what we're doing with virtual reality, we started combining efforts on what if, you know, we could create experiences, what if we could curate experiences that would impact a person. And that's where it kind of went off. And Adam had some amazing ideas and Alex brought in, they kind of invited me into the project and they invited me in as an advisor and things kind of progressed through there. But We actually implemented a lot of different physical effects in the system, but it was more for relaxation and getting people into a certain state of mind. So we used some biometric reads that we did in real time so we could actually augment the experience in real time. So there's a very real future of that kind of experience. It was inside of what we call a vessel that you laid down in, and the interior was built very much so you could relax and it could change from different types of positions, and there was wind and smells and vibration effects all to solidify that what you were seeing, it was real. But the biggest difference from that, from what we were doing at the Void previously, was we added in these biometric reads, and we added in the biometric reads to allow people to resonate with the world, right? So we did 8 different experiences. This project's still a little bit under wraps, but it's coming to fruition. But the experiences range from all kinds of things, right? So a really minimal takeaway, even from the prototype, was we had experiences that ranged from nature experiences to like quantum particle, like subatomic particle level stuff, and to freeform painting, right? To freeform painting and things like that. We did that intentionally to see how people would react to different situations, and in those experiences, your biometrics, heart rate, respiratory rate, and everything were reflected inside of the experience, which is really cool. But just as a quick takeaway, and I won't go into it too much, but after the experience, you could basically see a overlay of how you reacted to each of the experiences.
Wow.
And you could basically say, okay. Oh, you know, it looked like you were really relaxed when you were freeform painting. Like you should take up painting in your life.
Yeah.
Or when you were sitting next to this beautiful waterfall and just relaxing and taking in the moment, maybe you should do more hikes and be out in nature more. So it's just like very minimal takeaway, right? But the concept of prototype, what it really showed to us is the true potential of evolving content and making content very specific to the individual and very meaningful to them. There's a lot of things, if you could think forward in the future, if we had millions of people and we've collected tons of data, you could almost come up with, you know, ways of solving different types of things in our world, you know, with people. So the project was awesome. We built it out and they installed it out in the Four Seasons Hotel in Hawaii, and they've been running people through it and experimenting with the effects, and they're getting amazing results with that. And I'm actually really excited about it. I almost feel like there's a future where you could have some kind of mobile app or something, and you'd be like, oh, I'm running a little low, and you like stop off at this place and pick how you want to feel.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that could be a fun future to live in.
That's super cool. And just real quick, just going to remind you about the microphone. It's rubbing. Yeah, sorry.
Got it.
It sort of makes me think about, at first, VR seemed like entertainment. And now it's sort of seeming like it's falling into place with the idea that we're, as a civilization, becoming more conscious of ourselves and our place in the multiverse or wherever, however you want to call it. And I think about this when you're telling me about this SynSync experience. It's sort of like you're giving people the chance to reclaim control over their own nervous system. Mm. Because we're just constantly bombarded by out there, you know, and we're told we're stressed. And we're like, yeah, I know we're stressed. But we've been stressed for so long, we don't even feel the difference anymore. So I feel like this experience that you're giving people is giving them the chance to really feel the difference between how their daily reality is affecting their physiology and how, by having an experience that allows them to become aware of what it feels like when their blood pressure is up, when their breathing rate is higher than it should be, and what it feels like when it's when they're calm and when they're in a alpha brainwave state. You're Yep. giving people control over their lives and their nervous system again. What could you envision people having something like this in their home in the future, or like having access to the data that they could potentially collect in this experience, or are there opportunities to collect more types of health data in these kinds of experiences?
Well, I would say that all of that is possible in the future for sure. I mean, as far as SynSync, I'm not sure on that side of things, but I would hope that we would have immense integration with our real lives, with our digital lives. I feel like there's a convergence that will happen over several years where the digital world is just as important as the physical world, and they need to be unified, right? Mm. And we can actually, like what you're saying is, we can actually discover things differently inside of virtual simulations that impact our physical world. We can automate a lot of things that take several years to perfect. Like, think about people that actually know how to meditate and to get into a state. That takes a lot of training. In sure. some cases, yeah. They practice their whole lives to get into that moment, to be able to get into a moment where they can actually relax and they can concentrate on things. With virtual reality and the technology that we have now, we can automate a lot of that, because we can get from biometrics and we can take people right to a state. And we can take them through a systematic process of showing them things and visuals and hearing things and vibrations to get them down to a state of awareness that, you know, a monk could potentially get to. You could take an average guy off the street and they could meditate like a monk, and then you could teach them anything you want to teach them.
That's hopefully exciting.
Positive things and uplifting yeah. things that would change their lives. But I think the cool opportunity for us is, I guess with virtual reality and even augmented reality, is we don't have to beat people over the head that we're going to fix them, or that we're going to give them this cool solution that's going to solve all their problems in life. They can come in just for the face value of the entertainment. They can come in and say, I just want to do this because it sounds sure. relaxing and fun, and my friend said it was great. And yeah. They'll leave potentially with suggestions. They'll leave with a different perspective on the reality, how they would treat their friends and family and their relationships and all kinds of things, right? As long as we suggest the right types of things in the experience in a positive way.
Yeah, you mentioned you had this transition or in the shift in perspective around VR, and Summer was also talking about how, you know, her own experience of what VR means to her. And for me, I resonate a lot with that. You know, initially I was really attracted to the possibility of entering these immersive 3D game worlds, and that still is really fun and exciting and amazing. But over time, what I came to realize was, you know, that's all cool and fun and entertainment, like the not to put that down, because that definitely certainly has value, but what holds potentially even more value is the way in which VR can change and shift a perspective on our own reality and how we think about ourselves, our identity, how we think about how we relate to other people, how we relate to the world. And I'd love to understand and get a sense of how your perspective of reality has shifted from when you first started getting into the industry, the early days of VR. What was your perspective like at that point versus where we are now? Because you've been doing this, for I think about like 6 years or more, experimenting with all kinds of, cutting edge VR technology.
Yeah, that's a good question. And the evolution is actually pretty cool. I from the very beginning, I came from the film and video background doing CG animation. So I was on the set a lot and we did all this motion capture stuff over green screen. And so I'd seen that a lot. And that's kind of where the Void concept came from, was I wanted to be inside of the monitor. I want to be inside of the real-time environment with physical objects that were mapped around. I want to touch things, as real things, and be in there. My first approach to this was just, hey, this is the new entertainment, and this is going to be the new movie theater. And over time, like I said, watching people go through the experience, and I would have to say, going through the experience several times, being in hyperreality situation. There was one time where I stayed inside of hyperreality for almost an hour, just because I was just trying to see if I could burn out how long the battery would last on the backpack. Hung out in there. I came into work early and I hung out in there, and I was looking at all the cool detail that all the artists put into the environment. But doing several simulations like that, I think I had an advantage to seeing how that would impact my reality, and then seeing evidence of that, of people when they come out of the experience having this whole new perspective on reality. And we weren't even doing anything. We were just putting them into a cool experience where they got to fight like a Ghostbuster, right? But they came out just renewed. And I think going through several simulations like that, actually, I started searching for curating the right type of experience. And that allowed me to kind of open my mind to other enlightenment techniques. I looked at a lot of different meditation techniques and different type of neurolinguistic programming kind of systems and teachings and stuff like that to try to find, the right person, the right combination of things to curate an experience. And through that process of discovering some enlightenment things in meditation, I was like, wow, I saw evidence like, man, we could really automate a lot of this, and we could make this something that everybody could enjoy. They can come in for the face value of entertainment still, but there's a bigger opportunity here. There's a bigger opportunity to make an impact, a positive impact on human existence and reality.
Absolutely.
And so is that a good evolution there? It's pretty wild, but doing thousands of simulations in hyper reality kind of changes your perspective on things.
I'm sure.
You come out and you're like, is this a real computer? Is this a real chair?
Yeah, and I wonder how many people truly understand or are asking that question themselves, right? Because if that, to the average person buys technology, they see stuff like the Oculus available, and what they're seeing, of course, is games, mostly shoot 'em ups. Pretty much is like the 80-90% of what's hot right now in terms of the content. Not all of it. I mean, certainly there's some amazing artsy, beautiful experiences that have nothing to do with shooting or anything violent. But by and large, I mean, it's mostly shoot 'em ups, just like it is kind of on regular traditional consoles. And what I really appreciate about SenSync is it's integrating technology with spirituality and mindfulness and meditation, and it's coming at the perspective of how can we leverage the latest advances in technology, VR, neurofeedback, biofeedback, to enhance a person's experience out, without having to wear a headset. I think it's a really beautiful use case of the technology.
Absolutely. I think in the future, we're going to see, more of that shift. It's kind of unfortunate that virtual reality has been framed as this video game thing. I mean, it's in a game engine. So, but what is a game engine? A game engine was four games, but what if it was a world engine? What if we changed some of the language that's around this, and the experiences that I think that will eventually evolve to is what I'm talking about. Experiences that amplify our human existence and not take us away from human existence, because we all desire that. We all desire to have experiences and to share those experiences with other people. And it's kind of built into our DNA. And I think we'll definitely naturally get there. We just happen to focus on video games because it's built in a video game platform. And that's all we understand. But once people start seeing evidence of a change, we start gathering data that these applications are actually working and they show that they're working, man, the application for each of the verticals is just going to explode. And it will change the whole shift, right? People will stop thinking about virtual reality as video games. There's a lot of people, investors, there was a few investors that came into the void early on to invest. They didn't really know what they were getting into.
which was a good thing, right?
It was a good thing, right? Because they went through the experience and like, holy cow, that is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And we have a little powwow after and they're like, you know what, if you would have told us that it was a virtual reality, we would have equated that to a video game. And we're like, we would have never come because we don't play video games and we never do that. But, you know, these older guys are like, I would go on that every day. So there'll be a switch. There's this little bit of a chicken and egg type of thing right now where we need investors, we need technologists to step up and put forth their best foot forward in collecting data, because there's this chicken and egg thing where people and investors don't want to spend energy on something until they get data to show that there's a change, right? But we can't actually get the data to show there's a change until people step up and go for it, you know? So that's my realm right now is working inside of that place and hopefully guiding people to that realization that this is the new frontier. This is where we're going to make huge impacts and huge change worldwide. Once the headsets come out, you know, in full force, the thing with headsets that I just like to say regarding this is the headsets that came out, it was kind of interesting. And I think I've talked to you about this before, but I feel like virtual reality got a little ahead of itself. Where we just released headsets out into the market and people are like, what are these? Like we didn't actually release television to the market until people understood that it was important to them. Right. Once they understand something's important to them, they're willing to pay all kinds of things. I mean, the last phone I paid like $1,200 for, right? Like it's important to me though, because it's part of my life and it helps me connect to all kinds of people. So once people start seeing this data, they start seeing how it influences their life and how it can change their perception on things and make them better people. Of course, people are going to be buying headsets like crazy when they can see that it's not just, you know, for video gaming or all these other things, but it actually can impact their reality. They'll pay whatever once it gets to that point. So I think setting the foundation for that future, we need to do it right now.
Yeah. And you mentioned, sorry, do you want to?
I was just going to ask if there are any other barriers besides the data, of course, that provides proof of what is possible through VR. Are there any other barriers that you're aware of that are sort of serving as blockers to bringing virtual reality into different industries?
I think it really comes down to allowing people to have experiences that are meaningful to them and that they can see that that's useful for them in their life. You know, anything that's useful, I mean, look at Apple, look at computers and all those things, anything that's useful to people in their life, you don't have to try to sell them, right? Mm-hmm. So it's still on the edge right now. It's like, yeah, it's a fun thing to have, but it's not
don't
really
need it. Don't
useful.
Need it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the barrier right now and something that we all have to kind of conquer together is making it more useful, making it more meaningful to people. Once we do that, then it's going to be, it'll be over after that. Like people want it in their lives. I'm trying to think of anything else, but I mean, that's the crux of the whole thing is making it meaningful for people. And some of the location-based things and the void was, an attempt to do this, right? Like really eliminate all the barriers and let people experience something that's meaningful to them. We can do that at location-based entertainment kind of places, even like SendSync and some of the other things I'm working on. And that will kind of be the catalyst for people to start creating content and start creating the experiences that are that coincide with that or are meaningful also in the, in those spaces, if that makes sense. Because some people are going to be like, I'm never going to buy a headset. But if they went to a location-based experience and like, oh my gosh, I got to have that in my life, then they're going to buy the headset. And if that content's there that is also validates that feeling they had at the location, then man, we're set.
Yeah. I mean, certainly the experience that I've had at The Void and also, you know, other LBE like Dreamscape is some of the peak VR experiences, the peak immersive experiences that I've had where, you know, you mentioned at the top of the episode here, the comparison to dreaming and specifically lucid dreaming. And this is something that I can relate to as well, you know, over the last, I don't know, 5-6 years. I mean, probably in relation to when I started getting into VR and when I started to, you know, expand my consciousness around, you know, what is going on in reality. I've had many more lucid dreams, you know, in the past few years combined than the last, you know, than my whole life combined. And these are, you know, we don't necessarily need to get into the details of them, but the thing that is so striking and bizarre and makes me really question kind of like what's going on is just the reality of these other experiences of these other dimensions that I'm visiting. And it's, you know, funny to remember, you know, a lot of the language that you were using with The Void was around like traveling to other dimensions, like you were going somewhere, and this relationship between you know, the technology in VR and interdimensional travel. I'm curious, like, are you familiar with, or like, how, like, do you often experience lucid dreams? Is this something that you're into? Like, are you like how very into much. that more esoteric aspect of reality? Are you aware of, or have you experienced yourself?
Yeah. Yes, I'm very much into that. And there's something that was very much amplified for me in it when we were creating The Void. I had what I thought were, you know, Matrix like experiences where the cat like comes back into the room and like, oh, it's a glitch in the Matrix, right? Like I'm having deja vu. I had deja vu, like, you know, maybe 2 or 3 times a year. And it was very vivid and never important. It was like, I was going to get a Coke at a gas station with my brother. I'm like, hey, I've been here before. This is weird. But they were very, very realistic. And I knew how I felt. I knew, you know, what we were going to say next, which is cool. So I've always had that like deja vu moment.
Interesting.
When we started creating The Void, those amped up like crazy. I don't know if it was from doing the simulations or what it was, but I started having these, remembering these dreams and being in these locations that would come about like 3 or 4 times a week. Like it got pretty intense. Wow. You know, we'd have like guys from China I've never met in my life come over here into the U.S. and meet with us around the table, and I know exactly what they're going to say next. I remember how I felt, and I'm just sitting here going like, "Is this real life?" So wow. I mean, so some of the I started writing a book on dream theory that I'm still working on. But if you look into dreams, we really don't know very much about why we dream other than it's healthy. But there's a whole bunch of like theories out there of why we dream, why we have to sleep. There was a comedian once that said, you know, if I was to try to explain, you know, why we sleep to an alien civilization that came down, they'd be like, so why do you go to sleep? Well, I eat a whole bunch of food during the day to get all this energy. But then I still go to sleep for 8 to 9 hours. It's like, it's a really weird concept. Right?
Yeah.
I have no idea where I was going to sleep. but speaking about the intangible things in our lives, I think, you know, doing the research that I've done on enlightenment and then even a lot of scientific research, in quantum theory and things like that, science is starting to show that there is no real separation between objects, that some of the things that we've been told in the past by science are not necessarily true when you get to that level. And so the more we realize that, how powerful is virtual reality to illustrate to us or to show us that there is no separation between objects. There's no separation between people and how their influence is felt. Man, like if you could, you know, if we were to warp forward in the future and we had an experience that could illustrate to a young child that they're not separated from their parents, they're not separated from the people around them. Every single thing that they do, every decision that they make influences them in a very, very impactful way physiologically to all of the people around them and their surrounding. Science will prove this. I think they've already proven a lot of this with some of the things that they've discovered. But the more important piece is explaining to the layperson that reality, right? Like, that's hard. But if they could experience it, if we could experience that kind of exchange of non-separation, like how, I mean, you can just imagine like how our reality would shift when we understand that we're not separate from each other, that by fighting with you or fighting with my brother, I'm only really fighting with myself because we're connected and we're one, right? Like, it would change a lot of things. So that's a huge another possibility, you know, that I think we'll discover here in the future sometime. But it's an opportunity for us to amplify. I think it's going to be a very interesting case for virtual reality to kind of illustrate what science has already found out now and into the future, for sure.
Well said. And that's something that I resonate a lot. I mean, I gave a whole speech on this, you know, the illusion of separation, right, at VRLA and connecting it back to VR. And certainly the story of separation, right? This narrative about how we believe that we're separate from each other or disconnected is at the root of a lot of the dysfunction and challenges that we face right now.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting, as you were describing it and connecting it back to VR, I was considering how, you know, when you put on a headset and you're seeing a virtual world with a virtual props and other objects placed within it, the objects appear separate, but they're all being rendered inside of the same computer.
Yes.
So that's very interesting. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not
parallels to draw there.
Yeah. Well, and I don't necessarily need to make the argument that we're in a simulation or we're in a computer. Like, I don't necessarily need to go there, but I'm reminded very strongly of the research and work from Donald Hoffman, who talks a lot about reality and what reality is. And one of the comparisons the metaphors he uses is the desktop interface on our computers as a metaphor for helping us navigate and use the computer, but it's not necessarily the actual reality of the computer itself. So for example, when you have a folder icon on the desktop, it's not to say that folder looks, it's not blue and it's not up in the corner of the hard drive. It's just how the computer is presenting it to you so that you can engage with it, engage with the reality of it. So it's making it useful. Or like, we don't need to know how all of our little individual neurons are firing one by one, but we're able to have this kind of broader picture of reality that is allowing us to actually interact with one another and the world.
Yeah. Imagine how fast we can evolve with these new visualization tools, right? Being able to visualize some of that and realize that that separation is just kind of a facade. Like what you're talking about, we use our bodies, we use things to communicate things, like you're saying, and doesn't necessarily mean that it's separate from other things. So it's a huge opportunity. We'll experience a huge shift in reality with every vertical you can think of, right? Like it goes on and on.
It is a facade, but you know, it's funny because it's a useful facade.
Yeah, exactly.
It serves a function. It serves a purpose, right? Because if we're just, I don't know, I can't speak for others, but I know that we're all connected. I know that we're all ultimately one consciousness experiencing itself temporarily through different perspectives, through our own individual, unique, you know, bodies. But we're able to interact with one another and to learn more about ourselves through each other, through a relationship. And
right. When did you discover that though?
That's a good question. Probably a few years ago, on psychedelics.
So instead of psychedelics, because psychedelics for children would be kind of weird. What if there was a world that existed where we had a new education system that taught people that there was, that was a thing, that our separation is just that. It's a useful tool, but it's not the real truth. The real truth is something deeper. Right. Imagine what, you know, the new generations will be like when they have these tools. They'll be more creative. They'll be able to accomplish things faster because they're not fighting with each other, because they are, they realize this true reality of non-separateness and completeness. That's where we're going to see a huge shift. And you know, I've seen other people in the industry, you know, Elon Musk and a few other people talk about, we need to stop teaching our people how to do what robots are going to do, because they're going to do it way better than us. We need to do what human beings are good at, which is being creators, making things and coming up with concepts and ideas, because computers are not going to be so good at that for a while, if ever. And I think that will be the shift to kind of the new education system through using technology to expand awareness, I guess. I'm really excited to see that future of creation, because it's really kind of unbridled creation at that point. If you started at a younger age with what you know now, like imagine if your parents and your teachers were telling you these things, explaining to you the real reality. Wow. The reality we grew up in was, you know, something isn't impacted until it hits another object. Like that was what we were told our whole lives. And that's not necessarily true. It's true on one level. But
sure.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, that's going to be a really cool future to see, I think.
And I think like the purpose of technology is to be an extension of ourselves. Or that's what it is. It's an extension of ourselves. It's how we evolve. And I think if we start using technology for that purpose for everyone, and we start relieving people of these mundane, repetitive jobs that robots can do, and allow people to spend their time doing things that foster creativity within themselves and give their own energy back to themselves, I think we would see some really amazing things happen.
Yeah, I've been talking about, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
You're good. Yeah.
I've been saying for a while now that we have an opportunity to stop duct taping our problems or trying to fix things from a top down way. We have new technologies to work from the inside out, like being able to change within that will then actually change the reality that we live in. It feels like we've been for a long time just trying to put duct tape on our problems, whatever that problem is. You can see in reality where we can make that shift now.
Yeah, it's time to stop duct taping everything and start really looking at where the root of our problems really lie, and to look inside, right? And stop externalizing and blaming other people for our issues and take responsibility for our own lives. And that's where we find our true power. Yep. And coming back to what you're mentioning about us, you know, being creators, where I get really excited coming back to virtual worlds and VR and game engines, as we were talking about before. I'm assuming you saw the teaser for Unreal Engine 5. Yeah.
So amazing.
That's a nod for those listening. Wow.
I mean, I'm like, what aliens came down to the earth and pulled
us up? For those who haven't seen this teaser, which I think came out yesterday or 2 days ago, pretty recently, it's just a tech demo for the next generation of Unreal Engine, which is one of the two main game engines that people use to develop games and other kinds of virtual experiences for VR or for PS5 or, you know, whatever devices people make it for. But I don't necessarily need to give it all away, but the level of the fidelity of the rendering and the quality of the graphics and the detail of the world and the characters and the lighting running at real time is unprecedented. And this is the first little clip, the first, you know, tech demo of the early days of what is possible with this new version of the software. And of course, the hardware running on a PS5. But this is where I get super freaking excited for the future of entertainment and just life in general. I mean, to be able to step into these absurdly detailed worlds that are rendered like they, I mean, at least the environments, I'll say that the environments look real, photoreal, like completely real. The characters, you know, still not quite there yet. That's, you know, obviously a lot more challenging. But, you know, connecting this to, you know, experiences like The Void or experiences that you can have at LBE, like we can start to imagine what the future will look like now. Seeing this video is like, wow, can you imagine that going into VR with rendering like that is just like kind of boggles the mind.
It really does. And, you know, these early days of LBE and virtual reality, it's that's where things kind of break down for people. Not having those physical effects is one thing, but when you get closer and closer to something, right, and it starts breaking down to its, like, you know, yeah, to its primal polygon shapes and things like that, it really kind of takes you out of the experience. And so, you know, what Unreal Engine 5 is showing is like you can get on your hands and knees and look at freaking pebbles and the shadows are perfect, just like reality. Like, that's going to be pretty mind-blowing. And imagine how solidified our memories will be when it becomes just as real as this.
Yeah, that is exciting, but also there's a part of me that is like kind of fearful or like a little like nervous when you say that. Like,
yeah, a little bit.
It's like I remember in the early days, that was that promise, that idea was something that really got me going. I was like, oh, I can't wait for that. And now seeing what that could look like with this tech demo and just imagining the day when we, I guess the world has changed a lot since you know, I first got into tech and into VR. You know, we have shows like Black Mirror, and the world in a certain way has gotten a much more dystopian. Not completely. I mean, there's certainly a lot of amazing, beautiful things happening as well.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know.
And we also don't know what's happening right now is going to lead to.
Exactly.
Like, it could look very horrible on the surface, but we don't know what's going to,
well said,
to catalyze.
Yeah. And maybe there's the realization through the technology of this oneness that we're talking about, where we're more selective on the experiences that we choose in the future, even though they are very photorealistic.
Right.
Like, okay, well, this is actually going to create a memory for me. Do I really want a memory of, you know, Grand Theft Auto in like triple HD burned into my mind, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know if I want that. So we might have to be a little more selective of our experiences. And we do this in reality, right? Like, we don't intentionally put ourselves in bad situations. So I think that we do need a little bit of that knowledge. And like I said, some of that data to show that, hey, these are meaningful experiences to people. And people are experiencing change inside of these. And so this is a disclaimer, people. This is something that will influence you. And this is something that, because you can't say that your experiences in your life don't influence you, because they made you who you are right now, right?
Sure.
So when they are as one as that in hyper reality and virtual reality simulations, we're going to start considering them that way.
What you're saying reminds me of playing Red Dead Redemption 2, and I was super excited for that game. And I was like just waiting years until it came out, and I finally got it and I played it a little bit. And it's beautiful. It's an amazingly rendered game. The visuals are just beautiful. But I just stopped playing it because like it was too real. Like I would get off my horse and just like murder some random passerby like out in the middle of the desert, and just like the blood would seep into the ground, and like their animation, like the difference from the first game to the second game in terms of like the realism was so large that like I felt like morally challenged playing this game. And, you know, certainly like my, you know, who I am today versus like when I played Red Dead Redemption, like the original one is very different. And so that's a part of it as well. But it's funny because you mentioned like, you know, we're in the goal, I suppose the goal of game engines is just to approach as close as possible to simulating the natural world as possible, right? And do we really understand the significance of that? Are we prepared to handle what that really means when it comes to simulating worlds in VR, for example, or, you know, at places like The Void, where we are utterly convinced that, you know, it is reality? Like, are we psychologically prepared for that?
Yeah. I think that the data will show that, you know, in the future, people will be doing things like where they, you know, A/B test, like a real experience doing something. And then the virtual reality experiences where they're collecting data, be able to show that impact. Right. And we'll be able to use that information. Hopefully we'll have that information before people start creating crazy things. But even if we do have that information, there'll still be that side of things. I've seen it through my whole life building technology. There's always a different side to the positive, right? And I hope to be kind of on the positive side of thing and creating content and creating experiences that uplift and bring people closer to each other. And that's a huge influx on that side is where I want to be. And it would be ridiculous to think that there isn't going to be that negative side, because it just kind of, it exists with any technology or new things that come out. There's always that side of it that kind of comes into reality. And that's probably for a purpose. You know, it's a purpose for us to make decisions and challenge ourselves in this reality. So a lot of really cool things we can do with the virtual side of that, also playing with those kinds of concepts.
Absolutely. Before we wrap up here, I want to get into some of your more recent work. If you're comfortable sharing, you know, a little bit about what you're up to these days. I know you can't talk too much in detail about it, but whatever you can say would be awesome.
Yeah, so there's a couple things I'm working on. I am actually on a couple of different advisory boards. One's for AR company. And there's a platform type of company that I'm working with, and I'm searching not only for some other location based types of things that I'm doing, but also a unification between reality and digital reality, where there is a very real way for us to have a Ready Player One type of world, where our digital world is just as important as our physical world, and we're going to be able to create something like that, creating persistence between experiences where I'm collecting things in reality that relate to my digital life and vice versa. Okay, cool. I see a very real future where you can go into this virtual world and do certain things and collect these credits and then go down to the Ferrari dealership and actually buy a real Ferrari. Like, that's going to be a thing. I mean, we're already getting there in a way, but it's going to become so unified that's a really cool place to be. The one location, I am working on a new location-based experience. I can't talk about it too much right now, but sure. there'll be some stuff probably at the first of the year with what's happening right now. We've been delayed a little bit on development, but this experience is hopefully going to make that shift or help make that shift in the market that this isn't a video game. This is not a video game. This is a place for you to make a memory. I would love people. One of my favorite things at The Void was to have people come out and make, man, that experience was so amazing. It was like the coolest thing I've ever done in my life, right? That was a great thing to hear. I'm like, wow, I'm really doing some cool stuff. My thought on that has evolved from that. And I would love people to come out of my future experiences saying that experience was crazy and it changed my life. And this is how it changed my life. And I think that's what's driving me in this new experience that I'm creating. They'll hopefully be out next year. We'll see how things go with our timelines these days, but sure. It should be really, really fun.
Well, we're very much looking forward to experiencing and seeing what new amazing stuff you're up to. I'm reminded of the early days of The Void when it was really just a rumor and a mystery around what you guys were up to, and people were going by and checking it out. And, you know, this word of mouth through the industry and through the press was like, oh my God, they made this magical thing that I can't even begin to describe how amazing it was. And I was like, wow, I can't wait to try this. I can't wait to try this. And now it's like kind of, you know, that's come and gone, or not gone. I mean, it's still here, obviously. But the sort of the hype around it is not nearly as intense as it, you know, it was before you guys launched. And now there's a new amazing thing from James and company.
And the crew, man, my team is so awesome. The guys that helped me build out The Void in the very beginning, the guys are all stars. They're the best in the world. And I just want to publicly thank those guys that are around me that make me a better person and really amplify, you know, everything that we're doing. I do like the idea of creating a machine in a way that inspires people and ejects ejects people back into reality that are inspired to be their best self and to progress and really try to understand and realize their true potential. Man, if you could create a machine like that, like, I mean, you can pass on now. Like that machine will just exist and continue to exist. And that's what's really driving me right now. So I'm really excited to release some stuff next year, hopefully. And what you do see, you'll have that same feeling like, is he really doing this? And yes, I'm really doing this.
Yeah, that's a big vision you have there, but I'm right there with you. I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, I've been thinking about as well, just like how can we leverage technology to create a better world? And, you know, in part, that's, you know, what we're here doing now all together on this podcast. And at least, you know, starting with the conversations around what that could look like and exploring, you know, what the community has worked on in the past and what we're doing now and where we're going in the future. And we are super grateful for your time and to have you on here. It's been a real pleasure. And
thank you guys. It's really fun.
Yeah. And where can people learn more about your work or what you're up to now?
Just follow me on Instagram and, you know, all the social channels, and that's probably the best place to see some updates in the near future.
Sounds good. So we'll link to that in the show notes. And This has been really fun. Thank you so much for those listening. We will be back on Monday night at 8:30 PM Pacific time with the legendary visionary artist, Android Jones. So we're really looking forward to that. Yeah, I should tune in for that.
I will.
Yeah.
Thanks, James.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. The time was well spent, and I really appreciate your guys' perspective on things. So thanks again.
Likewise. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Thank you so much.